So today we're very happy to have Chris Negron from University of Southern California giving the first talk of the day. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot. This mic keeps falling off, so we'll see. Maybe I should do it somewhere else. Okay. Well, we'll just deal with that. Okay. So let me try to actually write up the title of the talk. Okay, so this is, I guess what I'm calling it, kind of monodal localization theorem for the small quantum group. If you need to remember who I am, that's who I am. This is with my friend Julia Pavsova, and what I'm going to talk about is in this paper, although you'll have to kind of maybe dig through this a little bit to find exactly what I'm saying. Okay. And I'm putting kind of in quotes here because Julia said I can't call this a localization theorem. So now I just put it in quotes, or in parentheses here. Okay. So, what's the little outline here? So I'll just remind you about the quantum group and the small quantum group, which I think, unfortunately, I missed the talks on Monday, but I don't think this has come up. I'll speak about the promise of the Borels. Okay. Then we'll get into constructing the Borels. And these should be some kind of quantum Borels or small quantum Borels. And what I'll say is the total space is localization. Okay. Do something about this. All right. Paper was the easy part, getting this thing to stick on my shirt was the hard part. Okay. All right. Okay. So, let's just start here. But, okay, so let me say that I'm basically in characteristic zero. K equals K bar. K equals C. And Q of order. No. Okay. So let's start with this just kind of reminder about the quantum group. So I don't, you know, I'm not exactly sure about people's kind of backgrounds here. So I can run the risk of, you know, saying too little or saying too much. I'm going to try to kind of be in between here. But okay, so let's take G, so almost simple. Some almost simple algebraic group over the complex numbers. If you don't like this kind of language, you can just think of SON. And so I want to talk just kind of for a second, just the we'll say the FL form of G. So L needn't be a prime, but let's just pretend for the sake of me writing this here that this is actually a prime. So Q is some order L thing. So we can think about this quantum group in two ways, certainly more than two ways. So in version one, we're kind of a representation theorist, and we say that GQ is a characteristic zero lift of, say, this characteristic P version, characteristic L version, or more precisely, if I look at the representations of this, these are some characteristics of zero lift of the representations of this characteristic P version. So this will have some kind of flavor of kind of modular representation theory here. Another version, you can think about this, which is actually in line with this. Second one is that, so rep GQ is a kind of a braided deformation of the symmetric monoidal category of classical representations. And now this is over the complex numbers. So, so I might think about, okay, so here's rep GQ. Maybe here's here's rep G, and then maybe here's its characteristic P analog. And I have this kind of path going between these two things. I have a path going between those two things, and then maybe I have a path also going through these two things. And so this is all classical, and this is kind of quantum world. And if you're not familiar with the use of this term quantum, it basically means some kind of braided thing. And again, I assume that probably most people know that, but I don't know everybody here. And then I think about this picture as a picture over spec ZV inverse. So I kind of have this flat family of braided categories living over this particular scheme, whose various points are these various kind of representations of these kind of groups or quantum groups. Okay, so the important point here is this kind of braided information here. Okay, so that's kind of the little first bit of my intro here. All right. So, you know, I'm at this root of unity, which is kind of more fun but more trouble. So I'm at this root of unity. So at this particular, in this particular situation where, you know, as opposed to just taking the generic Q, I have some kind of dynamic a life that I'm living here. So I have at, well, I should be actually order Q squared equals L, a big classical part. So there's this kind of, so inside of this braided category, this GQ representations, lives a copy of the classical group. And this is what I would call quantum Frobenius. And so this is everybody who's central, kind of symmetrically central inside the category. And this is the quantum Frobenius. And this map has a kernel. Or co-kernel, if you're looking at it this way, called the small quantum group. Small quantum group. Okay, so the kernel, I will just write as some kind of surjection here onto this thing, which I'm going to write as like this. And so this has all the quantum are braided, not trivially braided. Info for rep GQ. Okay, so I can kind of split the big quantum group up into its kind of classical part and its kind of quantum part. And this is finite. So let me just write down just an example of this, which I always kind of write down. So I apologize for people who have seen me write this every time you invite me to say something. So if I think about small UQSL2, so this is my usual EFs and Ks, and let's see if I can do all this stuff. So it's some finite dimensional algebra. It looks like that. You can also draw the R matrix here, which I'll maybe try to fit in down here. So the braiding is instituted by some R matrix. And then I have some coefficients. Q, I. Okay, probably people don't usually get down here and write right down here, but okay. Okay, just to give you some flavor about what I'm talking about. Okay. Yep. Yeah, so...
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, so I have this map here. I said it was a kernel. And so the point is, you guess it would be a co-kernel. So I think like via some Kutnakin construction thing that this is a map of groups and it's an embedding. So I think this is actually some kind of surjective map of groups. And then, so this is representations of the kernel of that surjective group map. It's perfectly fine if you'd like to think about this as a co-kernel, no problem. But that's why I'm using the word kernel, is kind of thinking about this kind of Tanakan reconstruction thing. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay. So, all right. So, what's the? So, this is the kind of object I'm interested in studying. So, as far as it relates to this conference, probably many of you have some idea of where this is kind of fitting into everything. Let me give you some main problems, which are not the point. I can't tell. This is the. Which is not necessarily the main point of my talk, but the things that would be you'd keep in the mind in the back of your mind, some problems, some main questions when I'm thinking about this particular object. Okay, when I think about this quantum group at a root of unity, what are the main kind of questions which might be of interest to the kind of people at this conference? Which I want to be, I'll say again later, is not the what I'm going to talk about directly, but things that I kind of keep in the back of my mind when I'm thinking about this kind of object. So first is that, so for any Dinkin type, so if I have some kind of Dinkin type X, which is my ABC, whatever, DEF, I have some chiral 2D non-rational, kind of conjecturally, CFT, WLX, depending on some parameter L. And it's kind of, so I should have for the small quantum group some ribbon equivalence. Let's call it theta X between representations of the small quantum group for the corresponding simply connected algebraic group G. Of this same Dinkin type to representations or modules over this corresponding VOA, which characterizes the chiral bit of this kind of 2D CFT. And this, so this is non-rational. So we're living in this kind of non-semi-simple world. This is some non-semi-simple but finite category. So that's one thing. Q has order, Q squared has order L, let's say that. Yeah, and this, in this instance, Q had, should have order, yeah, 2L. Yeah, that's right. And so in type A1, so we had some particular conjecture of, let's see if I have to figure out these names here. Ganunov, Semikhatov. So Ganunov, Semikhatov. Get my names right. All right, keep putting it back in. In 2006, and plus a verification of this equivalence, verification by Terganin and myself. So what I mean is that this is somewhat amorphous. I mean, like, we don't really understand these VOAs outside of type A1. But in type A1, you can really be extremely concrete. You know, what is this? What's this representation category? And you can try to establish this equivalence, which was really connected here, and then proved by Terry and myself. So that's one thing you might keep in the back of your mind. Or not really, it just kind of a motivating, you know, why we're interested in this small quantum group. Another thing which you might keep in mind, or actually let me say a few more words about this. So, or maybe I'll write that second thing. Another thing which you might keep in your mind is that, so there should be a, I'll say non-compact uh, 3D anomalous TQFT with circle value ZS1 given by the bounded derived category of quantum group representations. So this would be so the bulk theory to A. Okay. And so we need to construct this. So not only in this case do you have some construction problem, this category is obviously, well, not obviously, but it's pretty clearly kind of too big. It has, you'd be taking R-HOMs, they're infinite. So this is what I mean by non-compact, is like you have infinite dimensional state spaces, but then you don't just give up and say, well, I'm not gonna have any kind of three manifold invariants because I have infinite state spaces. You should be able to define some kind of three manifold invariant from this. Correct. Yeah. So the question
does it make sense to consider the bounded derived category instead of derived category?
I mean, yeah. Of course, it makes sense. But which you're
no, I understand. But yeah, you know, exactly. Is it better to consider full derived?
Yeah. Category? So you're. So let me repeat the question. So, well, I guess you kind of got the question, but you're. Let me just say this. You're right. Right. Like, you should be considering this the full. And then you actually have two choices, right? I could take the end of the small thing, or I could take the big thing. I think you take just the full unbounded derived category, which is generated by the projectives. So what you actually have here is some stuff by Dorenzi and friends, where they construct a kind of theory which works on the projectives, which you think about as the compact part of this kind of full thing that I would construct, which I would have as some kind of endization of whatever their construction is. Yeah. No, I mean, well, I don't consider anything, but what's written, there's multiple things which are written, and one of the things which is written would basically be constructing such a thing on kind of perfect complexes. The problem is that you don't then have the unit, so I don't actually have my Kohn-Vorderman category inside of it. Yeah. And so part of this is like resolving this issue of the unit, which is actually quite difficult. Okay. So I won't talk kind of directly on these, these two things, but this is in the background of what we would kind of like to say. So so today I won't deal directly with these, but speak on some possibly essential, I don't know, they were essential to me, infrastructure.
Repeat the question, please.
Yeah, so is there a reason why I would use the derived category here rather than the abelian category? I think there are like hyper-technical reasons why you would use the derived category. The answer is because the abelian category won't work. But if you think about this like from the perspective of representation theory, like this happens all the time. Like I have Balanced and Bernstein localization, which works over the complex numbers, but doesn't, if you want to do this over finite characteristic for the quantum group, it just happens at the derived level. Like if I think about the relationship between tilting modules and the representation category, you don't have a good association at the abelian level, but it happens at the derived level. There are kind of multiple instances of this. Another reason is that your gluing formulas aren't really going to work, which, I mean, people have been trying this since like the 90s. There's not going to work at the abelian level. And so if you kind of truncate everything and work with projectives, then it should be fine, which is what happens in Dorenzi et al. Or I'm looking for the eraser. Or you can work in the derived level, and then you have this kind of Lucas Wolke and Christoph Schweigert say that you can also solve your gluing problem at the derived level, where I don't then restrict myself to projectives. Sorry, does that answer your question? I can't. Ish. Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, there's not a like, oh, I looked this up in some dictionary of things I should do, and it said I should use the derived category. It's more like, you know, just from experience, you expect that you can't kind of resolve these things. I was actually thinking about this the other day. What is the essential nature of like the derived category? Like, it's something you form complexes, you do some localization. Like, in what way is that a natural construction? Even, I mean, it's not really super clear to me. I don't have a great answer to your question except for that. Yeah, but I mean, CGP doesn't, they work on this like kind of semi-simple locus, right? Like of the unrolled quantum group. So in the unrolled quantum group, you have like for generic, these kind of generic weights, like everything is projective. And so they kind of use this in some essential way. Sorry, I'm not repeating the stuff. So the point was that there's a lot of literature dealing with the abelian part of this. Some of that literature uses the unrolled quantum group, which is this reference to what's called CGP. My comment was that there's this kind of big semi-simple locus for the unrolled quantum group, which I understand is essential to that that construction. Obviously we can talk about this like quite a bit later, Sorry, the more elaborations, are we good? Okay. So I'm gonna run out of time. So let me just say something about the promise of the Borels. So I'm telling you right now, I'm probably gonna probably gonna run out of time, and then there'll be some awkward thing where I'm like, oh, my talk's not done, but I'm gonna stop talking. Okay. Many of you have probably thought about the quantum group or seen the quantum group discussed, and maybe not seen the Borels discussed so much. So what's the point of these kind of Borels? So for B, which I think about as SLN or something like that. And for G, I have Borel's. So, for example, this SLN example for these for folks who are not so there's a bunch of these Borels. They're all conjugate under G, so I just specify one of them. So one of these things for SLN is the upper triangular matrices. So here's SLN. Here's B. So including the diagonal here. So if I just think about something very simple, so Jordan normal says, all elements in G live in some Borel. Okay, all Borels are conjugate. If I conjugate some element, it'll be upper triangular. So this is some kind of kind of primeval form of I think about some kind of reduction theorem. So somehow the Borels all together know quite a bit about of G in this kind of very explicit way. So this is some kind of primordial version of reducing to the Borel. So what I'm saying is that if I want to study G, sometimes I can reduce my thing that I want to study to a question about the Borel. The Borel is in many cases easier to kind of deal with than the group itself. So let me give you a more, I don't want to say significant. I mean, obviously this is like extremely significant. Kind of a more, I mean, let's just be honest, fancier version of this kind of thing. This idea of reducing to the Borels to understand something. So for a more intricate. So Arkhipov, Bezier, Kolmogorov, Ginzburg. So I'm missing some words here, but let's see if I can just say this anyway. So in 2003, they say, I have a triangulated equivalence between the principal block representations for big quantum groups, the principal block, this is equivalent to representations, coherent sheaves on some scheme, which I don't want to get into what scheme this is, but there's some kind of geometric object, which the spring resolution, obviously, for those who know, which knows everything about actually the principal block inside of GQ. Inside of the derived category of representations for GQ. And so the proof follows by proving analogous result for BQ, then reducing to the Borel. So instead of using this is some non-affine scheme, some quasi-projective scheme, they just use the affine space, which is just the nilpotent part of my Lie algebra. And they say that the derived category of representations for the Borel part of the quantum group is equivalent to coherent sheaves on this nilpotent algebra, which are B-equivariant. Well, this is what this coherent means. This is actually DG, so it's, so the question was, the second category is bounded. And I was saying, this is what this coherent condition says, but also this thing is kind of turned sideways, so it has generators in degree two. So even the structure sheaf is not bounded, it's technically as a complex. You need some finiteness there. Okay, so on this work with Julia, we want to similarly kind of, make some arguments which restrict to the Borels for the small quantum group. Okay, so in this work with went to similarly a reduction to the Borels argument, just like what I'm talking about over here, for the small quantum group. So the problem is though, there's no kind of construction of such things. So this is the kind of topic that I want to talk about here. So what's the problem? So like if I think about SL2, for example, here's the problem. So the problem is that when I write down the quantum group, what's the first thing I do? I choose simple roots, which is like choosing a Borel, choosing what are my positive weights, whatever. So you already choose a singular Borel when I decide, you know, who is the quantum group, who is the small quantum group. And then when I want to think about the Borels, I want to conjugate them. I want them to kind of spin around. There's a projective space worth of them for SL2. But I've not allowed myself that kind of flexibility. And so I kind of can't do that. A second comment, very subtle point, is that, you know, if I consider the Borels inside the big quantum, in the big group, a big quantum group, there's really kind of only one of them up to conjugation. I think about conjugation as a trivial kind of operation, right? It's an inner thing, right? So categorically, it doesn't do anything. So when I think about the big group or the big quantum group, there's only kind of one Borel I need to consider. When I think about the small one, though, I now kind of lack all these inner automorphisms. So as I spin my Borels around, they really do change something. Okay. So I kind of need to deal with this problem here, whereas in this setting, somehow I avoided dealing with it. Okay, so that's what I want to talk about today is how to think about the Borels, and that's the whole point. Yes. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to repeat the question.
I'm so confused. You gave us a definition of rep UQG that was sort of looked very clean. It looked like you didn't make choices. Did you secretly choose Borels already in that, like?
Yeah, so I did something very interesting in my presentation of UQG, which is that I didn't actually define it. I just gave you some picture where I said it's some deformation of G. So so if you like, UQ. Well, I would have to maybe do a less dotted form, but let's just say this one where I take the Lie algebra. So this is generated by E alpha, F alpha, K alpha plus or minus one, alpha simple.
Right, but I mean, you told us that somehow small quantum group was like the kernel of a quantum Frobenius map.
It is.
Does the quantum Frobenius map already select a Borel?
Is the that big quantum group? So this
or is the big quantum group.
Yeah, sorry. This is the big.
Okay.
So the big quantum group you already choose.
But the big quantum group has, you told us, has only one Borel. So why is this?
It doesn't have only one Borel. It's, you only have to consider one Borel.
Oh, okay.
So what I was saying here is that this has, I mean, you know, think about it, right? Like, I have other Borels. The thing is that I can get to all of them by moving around via conjugation.
Okay.
And at this level, conjugation is some inner automorphism of G. Right. So I can kind of ignore it categorically.
And in big quantum group?
In the big quantum group, it's a little bit more complicated, but I similarly have a kind of adjoint action of the big quantum group on itself, or more specifically, I have quantum Frobenius that gives me an action of the group. There's an adjoint action here, which similarly is all quote-unquote inner. And so I would think that I only have to consider, in my reduction argument, I only have to reduce to a single, my favorite Borel, and that will be sufficient.
Oh, but then the small quantum group I'm supposed to think of as like the kernel, and the only way to get between them is to like act by the things that are on the base in the sort of classical group.
Yeah. So if you're fine with thinking about the finite characteristic setting, what do I have? I have the G1 sitting inside of G. Then I take the Frobenius twist. Right. This is surjective. This is an inclusion. This thing only has a single point. And then it's some non-reduced scheme with a single point. And so I have no points to adjoint acts with, right? And this, I think, I'm going to make a claim, which I'm not sure is true. But this on closed points, this is an isomorphism. So topologically, this is an isomorphism. And so points in here are the same thing as points in here. So doing kind of maybe if I, you know, so adjoint acting by stuff here and adjoint acting by stuff here is the same. But the point is that this doesn't have any points at all.
Okay.
So there's no adjoint action which I can employ here. But for each Borel inside of here, let's call it B super lambda, there's a B super lambda sub one. So I have as many Borels I have here, I have little people living in here as well. Or I can think about representations. This is representations of the restricted enveloping algebra. There I have the Borels and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like maybe that didn't perfectly answer the question, but yeah. So the point is that you always have a bunch of Borels. Sometimes you need to consider them all when you're in the small case, either in the modular setting or in the quantum setting. And sometimes you don't, which is when you're thinking about the big group itself. And if you're interested, after I can say quite a bit more about this. Okay. Okay. So the point of the rest of the talk is, you know, I want to tell you, you know, who are these Borels and how do I understand this kind of reducing to the Borels argument in some kind of philosophical way. Not the only way, I want to be clear about that, but a way which is made, which is clarified by this presentation of small quantum Borels. Okay. Quantum Borels. And I should say this is just according to myself and Julia. This is not some accepted notion. This is what we use. Okay, so let's just get into it here. All right, so just the definition to get us started here. Okay, so consider consider a point. So for now, I'll consider a closed point. Let's call it lambda inside of the flag variety. If you like, this flag variety is the moduli space of Borels. I said they're all Borels are conjugate, so I have an action of G on the collection of Borels. Gives me an identification between the collection of Borels and this space, this flag variety. So for SL2, this is P1. So consider some point here. And I have the coset, which I write like this, sitting inside of G, which is living over this point. Okay, here's lambda, here's this. Okay. So this is a B torsor. This is, first of all, it's equal to some XB. This is a B torsor. Okay. So I have this action of B on B lambda, which is a translation action. Okay. So I just take a coset, I have B acting on it, okay? And I can restrict this action via so an action of BQ via quantum Frobenius, which I'll just write kind of suggestively like this. And then this acts on, I realize I'm switching right and left actions, but right. So I have a quantum Frobenius going to B, I act on B lambda. So I think that I have an action, this quantum group on this scheme. Okay? And then I consider a certain category, which is the category of BQ equivariant sheaves on this coset. Or on this B torsor, if you like. So these cosets are moving around. B does not move around. Okay. I consider, let's just say coherent sheaves, B lambda, B cube, which is, by definition, this is like a stack quotient. I want to say this is EQ equivariant sheaves on B. And B lambda. So this is monoidal under the tensor product which of sheaves. Okay. So this is a certain category of sheaves on B. Okay. So let me see what I'm supposed to say about this. All right. Okay, so a proposition here. So a couple different things. So the first is that for all lambda, this category of coherent sheaves is a finite tensor category of dimension, I'm talking about Fourpienus prone dimension, L squared. So this is just some finite tensor category. In particular, all the sheaves over here are flat. A second point is that, so for all lambda have a canonical central surjective tensor functor. I'll put surjective in there. Tensor functor. Which I'm writing as restriction sub lambda from representations of the quantum group to these category of coherent sheaves. Okay, so it's no bigger than the quantum group. That's clear by the calculation of the dimension. The centrality says this is somehow recognizes the braiding on the quantum group. Surjectivity says it's like an embedding of algebraic groups. Modular, no. Sorry. Let me write part C here. Yes, these are all isomorphic to this as plane tensor categories. I should say abstractly. As plane tensor categories. So I think about all my Borels, they're all conjugate, they're all isomorphic, actually, as group schemes. The difference is how you embed into the algebraic, into the ambient group. So it's this embedding which actually moves. The categories themselves, clearly they're different, but they're isomorphic as plane tensor categories, which I believe answers Pavel's question, which was, what, these were isomorphic? And the is that this construction is clearly generalizes immediately to arbitrary points in here. And G mod B. Okay. So I have, okay, so I'll say this in a second. Okay. So what's, where am I at? Generalizes immediately to arbitrary points. So the small quantum Borels are the pairs of these let's call it script EB sub lambda of this category of coherent sheaves. And maybe I would allow myself to choose different points here and let this move. Like I choose some S point along with these restriction functors, which give me the central structure of the group. Okay. So I'm running out of time here. I should kind of get to try to tell you some specific point about this. Okay. So the question of, you know, why is this the Borel? So you see, well, the advantage of this is that I actually don't move this one. So I just recognize that I can't move this, but I move the top part. And moving the top part is like moving my groups. The point is that in the modular setting, which I had up here, this does reproduce. You have like a directly analogous construction, and that reproduces the small Borels there. Okay, so what I end up with is a family. I'll claim that it's a flat family. Um, So I have these different points which are moving around in my base. G mod B. Parameterized by G mod B. So this so in this family actually has a total space. Has a total space. Which I can write as B tote. And so what is this? It's the fiber over the identity, which is just equal to coherent sheaves over G mod BQ. Okay, so I basically am out of time, unfortunately. And so let me just try to say a theorem and then maybe say some more words. Some more words about this, and then I'll kind of be done with the recognition that I didn't quite I just dumped a bunch of a definition on you. But yeah, let me give you a theorem. Okay, so maybe this will be a long theorem. So in the middle of this theorem will be a kind of a claim, which is not actually proved in the paper. Okay, so is that this category of sheaves GQ? So I think about this as some GBQ. So this is a sheaf of tensor categories over G mod B with fibers. So this is maybe what you would expect if you said something was a total space. So it's perfect to my Borels that I just introduced. Okay. So this is some global object whose fibers are these people. And it's So I have a universal embedding, a universal restriction functor to this total space, to the coherent sheaves. Okay, and the main point. So in here is a claim. So this is a claim. We didn't precisely calculate the fibers in the paper. We don't really need to. And the third point is that this universal restriction. Is in fact a monoidal embedding, a fully faithful monoidal embedding. Okay, so I'll stop talking in a second. So it's fully faithful, okay? Plus it derives to something fully faithful. It has a fully faithful derived counterpart. Okay, so this is the last thing that I'll write. And here I have actually the full unbounded derived categories. Okay, so I'd hope to tell you a bit more about this and kind of motivate to what's going on a little bit more. But let me just say, finish with some comments about this. Okay, so with respect to this idea of reducing to the Borels, so what's the point here? I take this family of Borels. This theorem says that if I consider all of the Borels together, the whole family, if I consider each of them, then this category, in fact, knows everything about the big quantum group. So all the information about the quantum group is contained in the Borels as long as I consider all of them together. And any property of, say, a representation here, if I look at its corresponding sheaf here, if I can tell that property by looking at the fibers, I should have a reduction theorem. I should be able to reduce to thinking about these Borels. And the second point is that same kind of phenomenon is going to occur at the derived level. So this idea about the Borels knowing everything about the quantum group is kind of codified explicitly in this kind of theorem. And the kind of local structure here is the sheaf structure over G mod B. And that, and so we kind of, the point of the paper, this paper with Julia, was not to kind of write this localization theorem. This maybe occurs in the first third of the paper. The point is using this to prove certain other results about the quantum group, which we could not prove without it. So it's not just some kind of abstraction, but I'm a bit over time here. So I feel like maybe this is a little bit abstract, but let me leave it there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris, for the very, very nice talk. Are there questions online or in the audience?
Yeah, so Chris, can I think about this construction maybe a little bit simpler as follows? That so you have your group G, which maps to G mod B, and this is a principal B bundle.
Okay.
So this means that if B acts on something, then I can form an associated bundle. But B acts on the category of representations of a small quantum group, UQ of B.
Okay.
So I can form an associated bundle with categories.
Okay.
And that's what you get. Is this right?
Well, I'm over BQ.
Hmm?
I don't know if your B is referring to the top or the bottom here. I mean... So we have I think you're constructing...
No, classical B acts on category of representation of small quantum group, UQ of B.
Yeah.
By means of Frobenius.
Yeah.
And so that means that if I have a principal, classical B bundle on something, namely on G mod B, I can form an associated bundle. So basically this means that, okay, I have some bundle, B bundle, so this has I can cover everything by open set, and transition functions are in B. Now I can replace them by the corresponding outer equivalences of the standard category and glue this bundle out of these open sets with such transition maps. So I think this is maybe a slightly simpler explanation.
I think we'd probably have to talk with that a bit later. I mean, I would assume that whatever you're suggesting, probably is the same construction. I'm getting a little bit confused about where the BQ comes in specifically.
Yes.
But yeah. So maybe we can talk about that on the break or during lunch or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Can you recover the braiding?
So when I say this is central, well, I don't think I wrote it. This universal restriction functor is central and monoidal. And so central means that I map into the Drempfeld center of this thing. In fact, I should map into the Drempfeld center of this thing, which is linear with respect to whatever this G mod B action is. So this just means I have a map here. So the point is that this embeds into the Drempfeld center. That's also going to be kind of faithful, and then I'll recover the braiding in that way. So these kind of Borels in the quantum setting, they don't admit braidings, but the analogous thing you would say is that it's central, and that's like respecting the braiding. So yes, you can recover the braiding in that way. And a similar kind of more bare bones thing is that take the small quantum Borel, look at its Drempfeld center, that's basically the quantum group anyway. So this kind of center construction is what you want to think about there. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask the same question more almost. So like, I assume you have actually calculated like the relative center of this map. Is it the quantum torus?
Center.
Yeah, I would expect there's a map from, you told us there was a central functor from something that was like rep QG to rep QB roughly.
Okay.
And
yeah, so there's
a central functor is a thing that has a relative Drempfeld center.
No, I think a central functor for me, what I just mean is that I'd have C to D.
Yeah.
Say this is non-braided. So this having a central structure, I just say that I just mean that this has a lift to the Drempfeld center of D. So in this case, I would consider instead basically G mod B Q, and then here I would have a rep U Q.
So my comment was that this is the data that you need to define a kind of center that's relative both to like It's also it also sort of undoes the UQG part. It's just like the rest
oh,
of
yeah,
the set.
Yeah, right. Like in the quantum group construction.
Right. I would and have I assume an that's something like the torus. Is that correct?
That I have not.
You sort of think of the double of this of the Borel as being like group plus torus.
Right. Yeah. So the analog of this thing that we know from the small quantum group. We did not calculate that. I do not know the answer to that, but more importantly, I don't know how hard that question is. I know what you're referencing. I've not thought about these kind of things. So maybe I should also maybe get some clarifications on what exactly you mean a bit later. But yeah, I can't necessarily speak to the answer to that question at the moment. Yeah. I don't know if it's.
Are there any other questions? Okay, if not, let's thank Chris again.